Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Welcome to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. So happy to be with you on this beautiful fall day. I suspect it's beautiful across the country. It is here in the Midwest, blue skies, perfect weather, perfect temperatures. And we're dealing with a very important topic today. We've not had this topic on the radio program in the last, actually, 4 years I've been running Alive to Thrive. So very excited to have our guest author Barbara Blomquist. Barbara actually walked into my store, Butterfly and Moon, at 814 South Main Street about a month ago, and we started talking, as we do with most of our customers, and she told me she wrote a book. Actually, she has written 4 books, and one of the books is called Embracing the Adoption Effect, 29 Stories of Families Touched by Adoption. I've been reading this book for the last couple of weeks. It's very interesting. I'm actually one of those women that never had children, and I've often thought about adoption, and it's actually still on my list of things that I'd like to do in my life. I mentor a young lady. I've mentored her for 12 years, and it's given me a little bit of a taste to be in a parental role, but full-time adoption, becoming an adoptive parent is a big decision for a lot of people. Whether you're the adoptive parent or the birth parent, thinking about, I hate the phrase giving up your child for adoption. That's traditionally what we've said. I'm sure there's better words. So we're going to learn what those words are. Barbara, welcome to the program. How are you today?
I'm just fine, and thank you very much for having me today.
Well, Barbara, I was noticing in your bio that you attended Middlebury College in Vermont. I'm actually from New Hampshire originally.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So we come from the same neck of the woods, as it were. But you're actually from Wisconsin originally, right?
Yes, that's right. I was born and raised in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm.
Born and raised in Milwaukee. You're probably my first guest from Wisconsin area, but... you're not my first guest that has had a BS in sociology, but you have worked in the adoption field for many years, and you've worked with a lot of people thinking about adoption and actually have been with them through the whole process. And I love that you've done a lot of volunteer work. That's a part of my passion, but you're a past board member, past director of volunteer services at Epworth Children's Home here in St. Louis, where you created and conducted various adoption groups, and you've been a board member and an adoption consultant for Learning Consultants, also here in St. Louis. So how did you get into this field? What drew you to the adoption field?
Well, my husband and I have three children, and one is biological and two are adopted. And we found that we were facing issues with our adopted children that we did not have with our biological child. So I didn't know what to do, so I looked for books, and there were none around at the in those years. Now, thank goodness there are. But there were just issues that surprised me, and I didn't. There were anger issues, and there were sensitivity issues. And I thought, you know, what is this? And I was ill-equipped to handle it. And as the years went on, I realized I was not alone. And many adoptive, even to this day, adoptive parents are dealing with issues that are really not in our scope of experience. So I started talking with and helping adoptive families, and I ran a lot of adoptive parent groups where adoptive parents could come and share their experiences, and then in the process of doing more research, learned a lot of the answers that I didn't have when I was raising my child. So the bottom line was I wanted to spare the future adoptive parents who were kind of flying blind as we were.
Okay. So that's like in the 60s and 70s pretty much?
That was the 70s. Our children were born in the 60s, so this would be in the 70s and the 80s. And
right.
In the 90s, I really got... In the 80s and 90s, I was at Epworth Children's Home, and I realized that 5% of people in this country are adopted, but only 2.5% are adopted by non-relatives, you know, what we traditionally think of as adopted. It's not like a step-parent adopts. So we're talking about 2.5%, but at a children's home, you will find that between 25 and 40% of those children who were put there because there are problems in the family were adopted. So
okay.
We're talking 10 times what should
so
be there. And
has the overall rate of adoption as far as women choosing to give up their child for adoption, has that gone down over the years? Because to me it seems like back in... You know, prior to the 60s, prior to the women's movement, there was such a social stigma if a woman was pregnant before marriage or, you know, there was just more social stigma around it. Now there seems to be a lot, you know, single parenthood is commonplace. But what do you think about that? Have the overall rates gone down?
Yes. In fact, they have absolutely reversed. In the 1960s, 95%. Of babies who were born out of wedlock were placed for adoption, and only 5% were kept.
Wow.
Now, in modern times, it's the reverse. Only 5% are adopted, and single mothers, as you mentioned, 95% now keep their children. So this is
so
why
what,
people...
what is the better language to use instead of giving up your child? I hate that phrase. I mean, is there something better?
I know there's actually a history to that. You can also, people say they put up their child for adoption. And this came from the orphan trains that came in started in New York, came to the Midwest in the late 1800s or right after the Civil War into the early 1900s. And children were literally put up on the train platform. They got off the train, were put up on the train platform, and usually farming families at that point would come and choose a child. If they needed a boy for a field hand, they would choose a choice. So they were put up for adoption. Now, what is traditionally accepted, which is a little awkward, is you make an adoption plan for a child, but that's kind of a mouthful.
Okay.
So
make
people
an adoption
still say,
plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are there more people or less or the same birth mothers choosing closed adoption or open adoption? It seems like open adoption has become more commonplace as well.
Yes, that's very, very true. And that is a very much a wave in the adoptive field, although there are pros and cons about it. If you talk with an older adoptee who's now an adult, they will almost always say, thank goodness I was in a closed adoption, because I had enough problems trying to figure out who I was. I didn't think I fit in my adoptive family all the time, but at least I didn't have two families to work with. Mm. And if it's an open adoption, there is contact with the birth parents, if the birth parents so desire. But that can cause problems because, let's say there's two or three adopted children in the family, and one birth mother is very attentive and sees her child all the time, or not all the time, but, you know, as permitted. And maybe the other child's birth mother does not. So, again, that can create a feeling there. And also, when the child comes back after a visit with the birth parent, there can be a disruption in the adoptive family because the birth parents may do things a little differently, but still they're parents. So it's either way, there certainly are issues that need to be dealt with. But you're right, open adoptions now seem to be the wave of the future.
And there's so many different types of family. I think the term family has been broadened, you know, traditionally father, mother, kids, and now family is extended family, families of choice, families that are either related by blood or not. So it's a more diverse world we live in. So your first book was nonfiction. Tell us a little bit about that, and you have four books, pretty amazing. I don't know how you did that after such a full career plus raising children, but your four books, the titles are Insight into Adoption, Randy's Ride, Searching for Abby, and Embracing the Adoption Effect. So let's talk about your first book, because that was nonfiction, and then you switched to writing fiction. So tell us about your first book and what motivated you to write it.
Okay, well, this was kind of a gun to my head situation. I was handling adoptive parents, and they kept saying, Barb, we wouldn't miss a session. We need this, but every time I go home, I have to call my friend in Cincinnati or something and tell them what I learned. Would you please put something in writing? And so next time I came with a handout. Well, I did this for about 6 months, and they said, no, we want something in writing. And I said, I don't know how to write a book. I've never written a book. But one day I thought, well, if I don't try, I'm never going to learn. So I sat down, and using all these handouts, which are the do's and don'ts of adoptive parenting and the, you know, adoptive parenting tips, I wrote Insight into Adoption. And the interesting thing with that book, well, there's several interesting things. As of 48 hours ago, I learned that it's going to be picked up by my new publisher, Tate Publishing, and new edition will be coming out in January.
Oh, fantastic.
And if your listeners want a copy of that, they can email me, and I can get a copy to them before it's actually released. I get the book 2 months before it's actually released.
Okay.
So
you'll
email.
Have it before Christmas. And maybe we'll have that at Butterfly and Moon, and people can, if they live in this greater St. Louis area, can come by and pick that up. We haven't spoken about that yet, but a lot of my guests that are on my radio show, if they're local women, we like to feature them in the Alive to Thrive section at the Butterfly Moon shop. So Insight into Adoption, so the do's and don'ts of adoption, what has changed since you first wrote it? Did you have to edit certain parts?
Well, no, it's basically the same. I think I'm just going to kind of rearrange some of the, and I just learned this 48 hours ago. It's still on Amazon, but it's basically out of print, so it's only in the secondary market. But this new book will be much, you know, it'll be more of a complete package. But I wrote it, as I said, for adoptive parents as kind of a manual for adoptive parenting, but what surprised me was adoptees, who adults now, came up to me one after the other and said, how in the world did you know what I was thinking of as a child? And someone else would come up and say, you got inside my head and wrote my story. So
wow.
That made me feel good that I, even though I'm an adoptive parent and I've never been an adoptee, I did get it. And so it's that was, as I say, my first book. And then the next ones were two novels, and again, they were to help the adoption world. But I thought, sometimes, you know, we see something in somebody else we can't see in ourselves. And both of these books are based on real people, but they're fictionalized. And the first one is about a teenage boy who leaves home, a loving home, because he doesn't feel he fits. And the experiences that he has in the next 18 months hitchhiking around the country, he meets different people, and he realizes that he is responsible for his life. Many adoptees feel they're victims. Mm-hmm. And they carry this through life very sadly. Mm-hmm. And they realize, hopefully, that it's, I mean, obviously you're nurtured and formed by your family, but ultimately you are responsible for what you do or don't do in your life. Mm-hmm. And then Searching for Abby was about a 35-year-old woman who had a loving husband and loving children, but she felt a hole in her life because she didn't know her original identity. So the book takes her through several episodes of meeting people, and then the information wasn't completely correct in the whole thing. And then she realized throughout this whole thing she was who she was. And her history may be important, but ultimately, again, she is responsible for her own life.
Mm.
And
so
then,
are these characters composite characters, or are they based on a single real story, and you just changed all the names and identities?
The personalities of Randy and Abby are composites of everybody that, not everybody, but many of the many people that I have dealt with, because it seems to be quite common. And it's very understandable. It's very understandable. Some people care about where they came from and other people don't. It's like genealogy. You know, some people are really into it and other people don't care. But the episodes and the situations are fictionalized.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of feedback have you received from your books? Have you had people write you letters and pour their stories out to you? Because I think sometimes people carry these heavy, heavy secrets, and it causes them a lot of pain. I had a friend many years ago who had given up a child, and it was an open adoption as well, but it really troubled her so much, and she became alcoholic, and it was just tearing her to pieces. But, but she kept it secret. She never talked about it. And I think we're as sick as our secrets, and the more we can talk about any of our secrets, the healthier we'll be. But what kind of stories have you heard from readers and from people you've met along the way?
Well, the main, I've almost heard it all, but the main thing is, in this last book, which came out in August, Embracing the Adoption Effect, which is the stories, as you said in your introduction, there's 29 stories, and about a third of them are adoptees, a third are adoptive parents, and a third are birth parents. And these people, I did these interviews with two social workers, and their stories were, you talk about the secrets, people were, for instance, birth mothers years ago were handled very inhuman, very meanly. They were fallen women, and no good man would marry them, and the guilt that they carried with them. And to this day, you're right about your friend. I mean, I had lunch a couple weeks ago with a 70-year-old woman, and I think she's saying the same words now she said when she was in her 20s. I mean, she just feels guilty. She it bears down on them, and to be able to know that they're not alone and that they can talk about it, and what they are feeling is normal. This is the main thing. What they're feeling is normal. What adoptees feel is normal. And our society has kept them quiet, like, oh, don't worry about it, you know, to the birth mothers, just go on with your life and forget about it. Well, you can't forget about it. A human being who's out in the world somewhere and you don't know where, they actually worry about their children. They worry that they're cold or they're hungry or they're unhappy. And with adoptees, people say, oh, well, you've got a loving family. Now, what are you worried about? Well, they've lost a whole family. They've lost tradition, heritage, parents, grandparents, cousins. And that's not a little thing, but they've been made to do that. So now these interviews that we had were lengthy, emotional, and when people left, we would say thank you very much for sharing your story. And they would say, thank you so much for listening to my story. Mm. All my life, nobody has cared. Mm. Nobody has cared, and I've kept it deep inside. And I've told you things today I've never told another human being.
Mm. And so, I think just that was a really healing moment for them. So, I mean, you are a healer as well as an author without even realizing it, because just being in the role of the listener and a compassionate listener. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard some very, very intense stuff over the years. Certainly women who have struggled with drugs and alcohol and women that have been raped. And that's probably another big reason why they might choose adoption as an adoption plan. So how have you distanced yourself from the emotional heaviness of the field and not carried that home from work, so to speak, those years that you were more actively in the field? But, I mean, there must be some terribly sad stories that you've heard over the years.
There are indeed, but it isn't something that you can forget. And what happens in 100% of our interviewees is I'm not a social worker, but I did these interviews with two social workers, and it would be interesting. I mean, the person would literally leave the room, and the three of us would just look at each other for, you know, some seconds or a minute, and we just couldn't believe what we'd heard, because the coping abilities and the nobility of the human soul through all these things that these people have gone through, and they have been mistreated by some of them. I mean, not only did they have a bad childhood, they may have had a bad marriage. On and on. But they came through as loving people, and we admired them. So it's all what came out of this last book, actually, was how important attitude is. Everybody had the same situation. Let's say all birth mothers. Some had they all gave birth, and they all gave their child up for adoption. Some are still victims, but very few. Most of them are grateful. They say the best thing they ever did in their life was to place their child in a loving home. And they're grateful. It's a difference in attitude. With an adoptee, some think, oh, my mother gave me away. Others are, wow, did I end up in a great family? I'm so grateful for where I am and the support and the love that I have.
Mm.
And with adoptive parents, when we did these interviews, some of them really struggled because they were flying blind. They didn't know why is my child so angry? And the answer is, we now know, because anger is a part of grief. And these children were never allowed to grieve for their loss of their original family. And they don't understand it because this was all so young in their lives. But there's an anxiety that is there. So the parents really struggled with dealing with something they had no idea of what it was. The very last question in the interview was, knowing what you know now, would you still adopt? And we thought, after hearing some of these stories, that obviously some would say, no, we really wouldn't. 100% said, of course we would adopt again. And we would adopt these same children again. Mm. And it was interesting. There were two reasons for it. One was nobody could love our children like we did. Even though we've had these problems, we still love them. And it frightens us to think that they could have been placed in another adoptive home. The second reason was we are completely different people than we were before we adopted. When you adopt, you often are faced with, obviously, a child of a different gene pool, and personality can be different, temperament can be different, certainly gifts and talents are different. And after you get over that initial, I'm going to make him a baseball player because I love baseball, you learn to broaden your aspect on life. Mm. And these people say, we learned what unconditional love was. We learned when they can accept their child for the unique individual that they are, they then can look at their next-door neighbor the same way, all of their relatives the same way, and the world the same way. They said, we would never want to go back to the limited experience that we had before adoption.
Wow. I love that. That just gave me goosebumps. You know that's a powerful moment when I get goosebumps. Well, we want to talk about all the various sides of adoption, and I think we have a caller on hold that might share another perspective. So, Barbara, hold on, be on the phone with us. We're going to welcome a caller. I think the caller's calling in from Colorado. So, caller, welcome to Alive to Thrive. Tell us your name.
My name is Marilyn.
And what part of the adoption process have you been touched by or involved with?
Well, when I was 16, I got pregnant, and I gave up my child for adoption at the age of 17, back in 1962.
Whoa. And so what were some of those things that were going through your mind? Do you remember that time period, or did you block it out?
Oh, my gosh, like it was yesterday.
Wow.
It's so vivid. I had no choice in the matter. I was told that I would either put the child up for adoption or go to Helena and live in the girls' home for unwed mothers. So I did put it up for adoption and then went into a terrible depression, postpartum depression, for several months afterwards.
Mm.
There was an organization.
When you were told that was by your parents, you were told that? Was it because of religious reasons?
No, my father was a rather prominent person in our town, and it was a real embarrassment for me to have become, you know, the Scarlet Woman, to have put such shame on the family. So I was whisked out of town, lived with my sister in another state, and had no choice. I didn't know that as a mother I had a right to keep my child because I was a child.
Right.
I was 16.
Mm-hmm. So, Barbara, is that are those some common things you've heard from other women that were faced with
absolutely.
That at a young age?
Absolutely. And it is so criminal the way these young girls were treated at the time. And the depression afterwards is very, very common because, you know, Marilyn, you were still a child yourself. I mean,
which I didn't realize at the time.
No.
I thought I was pretty growing up.
Right. But they were not supported. And the thing that actually surprised me, and I don't know if this was your situation, but the ones we talked about, once they did go back to their families, the families never brought the subject up and never talked about it again. Was that your experience?
It certainly was. And the birth father and I never saw each other again. I went off to college in another town, and that was the end of that story, except then I tried to find my son through this organization. I knew his date of birth, and I knew his place of birth. I actually didn't know that it was a boy, but in my heart of hearts, I knew that it was a boy baby. They wouldn't even let me see the child, hold the child, or anything. So I felt that he was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And found out later that he was a boy. he found me 39 years later.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. That's great. You will appreciate this story. I've met a woman who could have been you, and the same scenario, and she found her son in California. Actually, the boy was born on the birth mother's birthday. So the she went out to California. She was in touch with the adoptive parents before her birth son, but on his 40th birthday, she was out, and she had the same feelings that you did, this feeling of shame, which unfortunately seems to be carried on for years and years. It was, you know, you were impressionable, you were young, that she still felt that, and the four of them went to church one Sunday morning, her son, herself, and the adoptive parents. And she was sitting in church, and the minister said, "Well, we have a very special person with us today." And she said, he said, "You all know the Smith family, and you know John, and John's birth mother is here with us today, and would you please stand up?" And this woman said for 40 years she had been shamed because of this. She had been made to feel second class, certainly. And she said, in church of all places, she mm-hmm. said, "Would I please stand up?" And she said, "I just wanted to die." But she said, "I stood up," and she said, "The congregation looked at me, smiled, and clapped."
Wow.
She said, "At that point, my shame fell away."
Wow.
I think that's
awesome.
Yeah. There are.
Wow.
It is. It's really too bad the way these things were handled years ago.
It is. And today, or a few years ago, it was like, oh, so and so's having a baby. She's still in high school, and then she's going to take the child to school with her. It was like, are you kidding me?
I know.
How can we be so open and accepting today and treat the unwed mother like such a criminal? Mm-hmm. You know, the unwed father got by pretty damn easy.
Yes. Well,
but the poor unwed mother was doomed to hell.
That's
There's
right.
a double standard. Double standard, for sure.
That's right. I was interviewed birth fathers as well as birth mothers, and it was kind of nice to see, although they have carried this guilt with them. But they have the guilt that the birth mother has of not keeping the child. But they also have the guilt of abandoning the birth mother. And even years and years later, this bothers them. Because, again, they were like 16, 17, 18 years old, and they didn't understand all the ramifications of this. And they are afraid that if they ever meet their child that they gave up for adoption, that he will, particularly if it's a boy, he would be angry at them for abandoning the birth mother. So this whole thing gets very, very complicated.
Well, I was very concerned that my son would hate me,
mm-hmm. that's
or
very
would
common.
Feel that I didn't love him, and that's why I gave him up for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could just tell you briefly how that happened. His father was a doctor. The adoptive father was a doctor who knew the pediatrician who delivered him. And the two doctors conferred, and the pediatrician told the adoptive father my name, which was verboten in a closed adoption.
Right.
He never wrote it down, but he never forgot it, and always said to my son, "Why don't you try to find your birth mother?" Being a doctor, he wanted to know the medical history and why
wow.
the child had
That's
constant
cold,
nose run, allergies, and so forth. Well, he never did. He was dating this woman who found her birth mother, but she had died 6 months prior. So she said, "Why don't we try to find your birth mother?" And they typed in my name, and it was unusual enough that there was only one that popped up on the computer. And they picked up the phone and called me, and I just about, well, you can imagine my stomach just went right through the floor.
Oh, of course.
And the first thing I wanted to tell him was how much I had always loved him. When I carried him after he was born through the years, I wanted him to know that I had given him up, not because I wanted to, but because I had to.
Right.
And what he said to me was, well, thank you for giving birth to me and not having
wonderful.
An abortion.
Yeah, wonderful.
And so we met, and he's my son now.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We're real close. He lives in another state, so I don't see him that often, but we talk frequently. I am an instant grandmother, thanks to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I never wanted to have another child after I had to give that one up, but years later I did change my mind and I did have a daughter, so now he has another half-sister.
Mm-hmm. It's,
and
you
it
know,
turned
it,
out rather well.
Yeah, the statistics show that birth mothers... Your feeling is quite common that many birth mothers never have another child. So this is their only child on the earth, the one that they gave up for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's wow. also a very common feeling.
Huh.
I think what oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just think another interesting thing that I was involved in this searching group for 5 years. And it's adoptive parents looking for birth parents looking for the child they gave up for adoption, and then adoptees looking for their birth parents. And I was the only adoptive parent there. A friend of mine spent several months trying to talk me into it, and I said, you know, this isn't really what adoptive parents want to do, is to, you know, enhance this whole process. But I finally did go and kept going back because the adoptive parents... feelings needed to be expressed, and for instance, during one meeting, an adoptee was asked by another adoptee, "Well, did your adoptive parents love you?" And her answer was, "Well, yes, you know, as much as adoptive parents can love an adopted child." Well, that would break every adoptive family's heart. I mean, the love that they have is. It's almost
right.
More
they don't want to feel like it's not. Yeah, they're not doing
right.
enough.
But
well, I was concerned that my son was treated well, that he was loved, that you know he was in a good family. And all those years, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found out he was very much loved, but he felt like a fifth wheel. His adoptive parents had a child before and a child afterwards. He was the towhead, and they were all dark-haired. The family portrait looks like, well, who's that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that blonde-haired kid in there. He can't belong to the rest of these dark-haired people.
Yeah.
So for him to be able to meet his birth mother's family and have that whole relationship with my mother, my father had passed before that. But my mother and he, I mean, he came to her 90th birthday or 95th birthday and her 100th birthday. I mean, it was awesome to be able to have the adopted, the son, the prodigal son almost return home.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I'm sorry, Barbara, what were you saying? Thank you, Marilyn. Those are awesome comments and another perspective and someone who's willing to share about the process, which I think the more people talking about their experiences, the better. But what were you saying, Barbara, earlier?
I was saying in this searching group, I really got an education. I mean, I learned so much from the adoptees who are now adults, as well as the birth parents. But it was almost kind of ironic that many of the birth parents felt like Marilyn. They felt like, oh, my child's going to be angry with me that I, you know, didn't keep him, et cetera, et cetera. And they were afraid of this. So they searched, but they were a little reticent in following all the way through. And also it was difficult for them to tell their children that they had a child before they were married. And we would meet periodically, and someone, they would come in and say, well, Mary, have you found your child yet? Or have you talked to your child yet? Or have you told your family yet? And she's, oh, no, no, I'm, you know, this is all in secret. I'm doing this search, but I don't dare tell my children. Well, once they would tell their children that they came after the child they gave up for adoption, the children were gung-ho to find this lost child. And it almost kind of, you know, ran over the birth mother. What's taken you so long? I'm going to take over this search. So you can see in the different generations, this is no longer the shameful thing that it was when Marilyn and others in that same era had children. It's birth parents were in the searching group, but they were delighted, of course, but they were surprised that their children had this attitude. So
let's talk about
time.
Searching groups. I want to get some resources out there before we end. Where our time is going so quickly. I think this is a program we could definitely do a follow-up interview with about your next book when your next book comes out. But what are some resources for people searching for either siblings or, I know two people in particular who found out only recently that their birth father may have had a child that is out there, and their birth mother, so this is the same person, she just found out in the past 12 months that her birth mother gave up a child when she was as a teenager, and mm-hmm. her birth father prior to this marriage to her birth mother had a child by another woman. So there's these two half-siblings out there. So what can a sibling do to find lost siblings?
Well, it's in a way, it's easy. Some people say, oh, I just put in, if they know the name, they say, I just Googled the name and up it came, whereas others, it takes years. For instance, some of these people I know, if they know the date, now your friend may not know the date of the birth, if they know it's a male or a female, they can go to the birth registry in the state capitol. This is very tedious. And look up all the babies born that particular day. And you eliminate the boys if you know it was a girl, et cetera. And then you contact them. It can be tedious. You also...
But most people don't know the birth date. They might know if it's a boy or a girl. Like in this case, we know mm-hmm. she knows it's a boy that the father had and the mother had a girl. But beyond just knowing that and an approximate year, not a month or day, then what do they do?
Well, I think all they can really do, there are professionals who will do this searching. And you can perhaps find those on the internet, and the internet is really the answer to it. And it's often, I don't think any two people really do it the same way. One thing leads to another. It's not an easy open door. You go in and this is what you do. But
what do they charge, roughly? Low and high.
I don't know what they charge. You also can contact a family lawyer, and perhaps not all of them will know this, but you can get a court order. It goes before a judge, and you can get a court order to open records or to get information. And then you get into the professional field. And I don't know what they probably charge all over the place. They're different.
Okay. So, and we do want to make sure people know your website, because there are some articles, certainly summaries of your different books, and people can contact you through LinkedIn or your blog. So Barbara Taylor Blomquist, Blomquist, TateAuthor.com. And I also put that link on my Facebook page, facebook.com/AliveToThrive. We want to make sure all the listeners like my Facebook page and then click on that link to go over to Barbara's website. We have another caller. Unfortunately, they dropped off just a second ago. I'm so disappointed. We had someone calling in from New York. And if you're listening still from 631 area code, please call back and we'll open up the lines for the other caller. This is a subject that you know, a lot of people want to talk about, and they have a lot of processing. Are there adoption support groups for both women who had made the choice to give a child up for adoption, as well as adoptee children? I mean, are there support groups in most cities?
Yes, there are. Before I get into that, I also have a blog address which gives a lot of answers to the people who might be listening here. And it's all one word, all lowercase, adoptiveparent.wordpress.com.
Okay.
And I have a lot of entries there that explain adoption issues.
And I just posted that on Facebook as well, so
okay.
So that is available there.
Mm-hmm. They can also email me. On that WordPress, they can get my email from that. Now, going back to your question, what was
about searching? We were talking about searching.
Yeah, I thought there was something after that, and I'm sorry.
I read somewhere I thought that November is Adoption Awareness Month. Is that right?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And are you doing any speaking in the next coming months? Are you available to speak to groups? What kinds of groups do you like to speak at?
Well, I like to speak to adoptive parents. Many adoptive parents have come to me and said, would you talk to my child? And I said, no, I will talk to you and you talk to your child, because it really all is the attitude of the parent. And there's so many things, and this is all on my WordPress. There's so many things that adoptive parents still don't know. And I would just suggest that they do as much research as they can. For instance, being inclusive or exclusive, so often we will say to our children, you've seen so-and-so, you know, he looks just like his father. Well, to an adopted child, this is a stab wound to the heart, you know, because the adopted child doesn't look like anybody. And very often, it seems to be quite popular now to use timeouts in parenting. And you should not use timeouts with an adopted child, because the message you're giving them is, when you misbehave, you are sent away from the family, whether it be a chair in the corner or to their room, whatever. Now, this is something that we who haven't been there don't think about. But a little child thinks, oh, every time I misbehave, I have to leave the family. And this can lead into a very common thing, which is adopted children often, you know, I say often, it's still minute, but they will leave home because mm-hmm. they just think they don't fit. They have to find a place where they fit. So there's a lot of little innuendos, and that's why I'm so delighted that Insight into Adoption is being revitalized, because this is explained in these things. It's a world that we're not in, and some of the logic that they have, that adoptees have, we would never have thought of, unless you actually run up against a particular instance where it happens in your family. But adopted children, many adult adoptees have said that as adopted children, they tried so hard to be what the adoptive parents wanted. I mean, they were all baseball players or all musicians or something, and they said, I didn't want to be. Someone said, I took piano lessons for 10 years and I hated every minute of it. What we have to do with adopted children is open up doors for them and let them try things. They've got no roadmap. They're a different gene pool. And we don't know what their talents are or not. So when they try something and don't like it, that's not failure. That's just the wrong road. So there's so many things like that that's why I would encourage adoptive parents to just get their hands on a lot. Even though things are going well, because there are different stages that the child can go through. And the teenage years are a little difficult for everybody. But for a teenager who's trying to figure out who he is and doesn't feel the security beneath him, because adoption is man-made, biological children are made by nature to be in that family, but people make decisions as to where an adopted child goes. And you can always question man-made decisions.
Right. So I just, as we're wrapping up these last 10 minutes, I wanted to go back one last time to Marilyn and see if she had any closing thoughts or advice for women who are 20 or 30 years later after the adoption choice was made, advice for them with coping and embracing their life and their joy in their life, whether or not they've connected to the child that was adopted out or not. Marilyn, any closing thoughts?
Just that the one act did not define me. That did not make me a bad person for the rest of my life. I have gone on to develop self-esteem and self-worth that at that time I never thought I would. But all of us are valued. All of us have talents. All of us can give and receive love. And even if you make the horrible, horrible decision to have premarital sex, God help us all, and have a child out of wedlock, it's not the end of the world. And, you know, it was really a wonderful thing then to find my son and to have the love of my son and my grandchildren, instant grandmotherhood. It wasn't so bad in retrospect. It was just catastrophic at the time.
Right.
Ah, okay. Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts and feelings, Barbara. Oops. I'm sorry, Marilyn. I accidentally hit a button. What were you saying?
Just thank you very much for this program. It's been very interesting and informative as well.
Thank you. Barbara, any closing thoughts about advice for people thinking about adopting?
Only that, and we as adoptive parents heard all this but didn't believe it, but adoption is a wonderful, wonderful thing. You have the opportunity to take a child and that is of a different gene pool and cement that child into your family and nurture and love that child. But you do need to be open to the child. And the child, don't force the child to be, I mean, years ago they said, take this child and make him your own. That isn't what you do. You look upon this unique person, listen to the person. And also when the child has behavior, don't just treat the behavior. Often if a child is upset or angry or something, think why. It doesn't really make sense to me, or perhaps it isn't logical. Your other children don't do it, but think, why is this child upset? What is he thinking? And sometimes they can articulate it, and then other times they can't. But, you know, adoption has been going on since mankind began. I mean, the people who could care for children and nurture them took babies and young children who needed that and could not be raised by their birth parents. So this is nothing new, and it is an experience that adoptive families, we talk among ourselves as if, isn't it too bad everybody is not an adoptive parent, because it does change you. The minute you stop trying to force that round peg into the square hole and realize that that is an individual, I mean, God has given you an individual to raise, and it's an honor, and it's something that it's beautiful. It's just beautiful, but you have to kind of roll with it at times, and that's why the more you can learn, the more you understand, the better it's going to be for everybody.
Wow. Well, I think this is just an important topic, and I'm surprised we haven't had this topic on before. And I think one of the best quotes you said, well, two best quotes that I wrote down that I loved was the nobility of the human soul that people come through as loving people no matter what they've been through in life. That just kind of gives me chills, and I love that. And the other big aha moment for me was that if children don't grieve as children, a loss or a significant change in their life from childhood, that grief turns to anger later in life. And then, you know, we can have compassion for people that might have anger issues. I mean, men and women at all ages, you know, sometimes have had repressed issues, and then the anger comes out sideways. It's like it has to come out one way or the other. And so don't jump to conclusions if someone is expressing anger. It may not be directed at you personally. It may be sort of coming from a deeper place. And I think that's so important for us to have compassion for others. And that's something that strikes me about you, Barbara, is that you are very compassionate. You have some real-life experience and some professional insight, but you have a compassionate heart, and we look forward to seeing the first book re-released, Insight into Adoption, Do's and Don'ts, and possibly having you at Butterfly and Moon for a book signing this fall, before the Christmas holiday. And we do want to give a shout-out in our closing minutes to Streetscape Magazine and Fashion Week, which ends tonight. There's one more night. It's the third night of the week that Fashion Week has been going on at Lambert Airport, Romancing the Runway. And Butterfly and Moon is proud to be one of the vendors there. We're meeting incredible people. There's all kinds of up-and-coming fashion designers featured on the beautiful red carpet and runway. So that's tonight, 6:30. There's a couple of tickets left. If you're interested, call or text or private message me. And then October 9th, it's a Friday, we are so over-the-top excited that the author of The Kindness Diaries, Leon Legothetis, who was on Alive to Thrive a month or two ago, Leon traversed the world on the kindness of strangers. He had a bright yellow motorbike, crossed from L.A. to New York, then crossed the ocean, then crossed Europe, relying on strangers to provide him gas, food, and housing. And along the way, he granted dreams and wishes, people not knowing that when they were extending kindness to him, that he would repay them handsomely with funding one of their dreams, whether it's education or a new home or whatever. This man is incredible. And he will be at Butterfly and Moon on Friday, October 9th, for 1 hour only at 4:30. So mark your calendars if you live in the greater St. Louis area to join us. And then also coming up in October is a weekly meditation group that's starting on Mondays at La Coco House, starting on October 5, offered by Karen Philly Sullivan. Karen is the author of The Zen Weight Loss, and she's also a new author coming into Butterfly and Moon. And then there's a women's writing workshop also taking place at La Coco House, Bed and Breakfast, and that's Karen Burton. And Karen also is a past guest. She is a local author and a writing coach, and we will be workshopping some writing. So if you're interested in any of those things, fashion, kindness, writing, meditation, all kinds of great topics, please follow Alive to Thrive on facebook.com/AliveToThrive. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a fantastic weekend. And we'll be back next Friday, 12 noon Central. Please tell your friends to listen at any time. This show is recorded and is available 24/7 as a downloadable podcast. Thanks again, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you.
Looks a career, it is the dawning of a new age. I know the dawning of a new age. I would not exchange a few lines on my face. They all were to the wise, a disregard for disgrace. New decades coming, I'm gonna embrace, cause it's the dawning of a new age. Be torn.